Now, I'm going to talk to someone who has a very interesting story to tell. She is 25 years old, she's a chef, and her name is Anya Buds. Good morning, Anya. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
I'm so delighted that you're here today because, as I said at the very beginning, you do have a very interesting story to tell. But you're a chef. How did you get into cooking? How did you become a chef? Like, how did that part of your life kind of like start to exist, basically?
Yeah, I suppose it was kind of in ways an accident that I ended up in it. I was very much like when I did my Leaving Cert, I was very on the fence about whether I would do English or if I would kind of go down a more practical skills route. And I suppose during that time, I kind of used cooking as kind of a means to escape a lot of the stress and just chill out a bit. So by the time I was finished my exams, I was so fed up with studying and with books that I just decided that maybe culinary arts would be for me. So I applied for the BA in what was DIT, what is now TU Dublin.
Yeah. So you went into that then and moved to Dublin, I assume. Where are you from?
Yeah, I'm from Kildare originally, just outside Kildare.
Perfect.
Town.
So then you moved to Dublin to go to college to study culinary arts. And then you start kind of working in hospitality, is it?
Yeah. So I started working in restaurants around Dublin kind of from the age of 19. And I was kind of working alongside doing my degree, which I don't recommend.
Yeah.
So I suppose like I would have started as kind of part-time, which really in hospitality is like 40 hours a week. So
It's hard though too, because I know in the ideal world you wouldn't be working while you're studying, but like you need to live and you need to have money. Your parents can't afford to, you know, like to fund your life, like, and you need to also learn to hold down a job. But I understand what you're saying too. The hospitality industry is completely different. Even retail is still clock off at this time and you go home
for an
extent.
Yeah.
But the hospitality is like, crap, if we're really busy, and you don't want to leave because you don't want to let anybody else down.
Exactly, yeah. There's very much that you don't want to let your team down. And like that is one of the great sides of hospitality, is that there is such a sense of camaraderie, and sometimes your colleagues, because you spend so much time around them, they're almost closer to family members than like colleagues. But yeah, I definitely found I came under a lot of pressure to kind of take on more work, more shifts. And I suppose the other thing about it is like when you're training to be a chef, there's only so much practical experience you can kind of get within the college setting. So you kind of need to be working alongside of that as well.
You need to be in a high pressure situation where you have to get a dish out, or if something goes wrong, you need to know how you're going to react to that. And you can only do that by learning from people. Like, you obviously need the food safety stuff from college,
but
it's hand in hand, obviously.
Yeah.
Like, as I mentioned there, like high stress, fast paced environments, that's what kitchens are all about. Did you like working in kitchens?
I loved it. Like, from kind of the minute that I stepped foot in the kitchen, I suppose I was always someone who was quite an anxious person. I very much would have had like high functioning anxiety. So I found when I stepped into a kitchen environment and I had like an outlet to put all of that stress into, that I really thrived off of it, because there was something to direct my attention towards and kind of a very like tangible sort of source of, oh my god, we need to get this done right now, and it has to go. So I really, really loved it. I loved the energy and the buzz of it, and you know, it was just, I suppose it's just so nice to feel part of a team as well, you know, and like everyone is sort of in the trenches together, I think, and that's great.
It's so funny that you say that, that like you'd high functioning anxiety and then you go into what would be most people's worst nightmare. It would be such an anxiety inducing situation.
But I
suppose when you know you've got the skills
for
that scenario, you're like, no, well, I can apply these here and I can really like put them to good use. Now, how did you relax then when a shift was over?
So I suppose relaxing would have come in the form of like post-shift drinks, kind of, and just kind of, I suppose, like recounting the horrors of the evening and like what had gone wrong, what had gone well. And this very much was like a habitual thing. So, you know, you'd finish up a long shift, you might go for a few drinks, and then go home, or else maybe not go home, and roll back into work the next morning.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, because like most people, you know, it's different cultures, but most people when they finish work in an office wouldn't necessarily have to go for a drink or two or three or four to bring themselves down off the back of it. So like you weren't just having a drink and going home, it was like having a flake drinks, and then I assume then hungover going into work
in absolute bits, like coming in the next day. But I suppose there's like this sort of, it's kind of almost a toxic kind of culture of bravado, like everyone kind of rolls in and everyone knows that everyone else is hungover over, but it's like, oh, we just have to soldier on and get through it.
Yeah.
And it's not really ever addressed, I suppose. And now that's not been my experience everywhere at all. Like, I've worked in some kitchens with phenomenal environments and really, really supportive. But I think there is an underlying culture there of substance abuse and misuse. And it just tends to fly under the radar in bigger discussions around the industry itself.
Yeah, because I suppose people are looking for an outlet and it's something that's always been done.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing about it is because hospitality, like, everyone knows the hours are antisocial, but I don't think everyone really kind of comprehends what that means. So like when you finish up at like 12, 1, 2 in the morning, there is nothing else for you to do except for to sit down and have a drink, you know?
Yeah.
So in that respect, I think you almost kind of feel like you're owed it as well because you've put in such a long day's work.
Yeah. At what point then did you realise that things just weren't quite right?
Yeah, so I suppose for me, like when I started initially, I thought I was living the high life, you know, like I was happy to be working crazy hours, going out, drinking, partying. And then I suppose I just got so wrapped up in that, that my studies would have started to kind of fall behind a bit. And that for me, like, I'd always been a very academic and attentive student. And I was just exhausted all the time. And my studies were kind of the first thing to go. And then I suppose, like, you kind of realize, like, in the early stages, I would have noticed, like, the physical effects on my body. Like, I just felt sluggish. I was kind of, I had brain fog all of the time. But I kind of like didn't really pay much attention to that because I was like, it's just part and parcel of, you know, it's weird. Like, I just accepted it as like, this is normality. So, yeah.
And also when you're trying to, what I assume is if you, you know, if you're in a state like that where you are constantly hungover all the time and then something has to give, the first thing for you is not going to be the thing that's making you the money.
Yeah, for sure.
You're kind of going to go, well, I'm going to leave this one, have the backseat because I'm doing this to get here anyway. Yeah. So, you know, was that kind of the case?
I think so, yeah. And I think the other thing as well is like, I was so young when I kind of started. Like, I would have started in hospitality when I was 17 and then kind of in like more high-end fine dining restaurants when I was 19. And that is such a formative time in like a young person's life, but you don't really know who you are or like where you want to be at that stage. And I think there is a lot of pressure to kind of conform and fit in. So regardless of kind of how it was affecting me emotionally or mentally, I thought that I was kind of just, you know, being one of the guys, like I was fitting in, everyone was doing this. So I didn't give a whole lot of thought to it. And it was easy enough to say, oh, well, you know, it's not the drinking, it's just the amount of hours that I'm working. Yeah. That's why I'm kind of falling behind and stuff.
At what point then, Anya, did you realise that you had an addiction problem?
So I suppose it's hard for me to pinpoint when I would say that I, like, the acceptance around addiction is really difficult for anyone who's going through it. But you can certainly look back and see, like, kind of markers as to where. So I think when COVID happened, actually, I went home to Kildare. And that's when I really noticed the difference between my drinking and my family around me and how they were drinking. So I would happily sit down and drink a bottle of wine by myself. There were nights at home during COVID where I was blacked out, no recollection whatsoever, kind of just waking up hungover and like with nothing to do. And I know a lot of people would have struggled with alcohol, kind of especially around the start of lockdown, because no one knew what was going on. But that kind of persisted. And I think I'd been away from home for so long, my family didn't really have any kind of concept of what was going on in my life. And then they saw that and they were just shocked. Like,
but then at the same time, I'd say you hadn't realised either because of the, you know, the life that you were living, it was just totally normal. And then, but when you take out all of the things that you used as an excuse, like, oh, I'm just working really long hours, this is why I'm so exhausted.
Yeah.
That's all gone. Yeah. But then the problem, as you said, like blacking out at home is still actually there.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to like think that you needed to go to rehab? That's a huge step.
Yeah. I want to say it was the start of 2022 when I kind of first got serious about rehab. And when I say serious, it was like an idea in the back of my head. I kind of thought I was never actually going to get to that point because when you, like, if you are an alcoholic, you're kind of always trying to find ways how you can get your addiction under control, even if that's never proven itself to be true. You still are like, no, this time it'll work. So I think 2022 I would have called the rehab center twice, and both times, you know, we would get to the end of the conversation and they'd be like, are you ready to stop drinking? And I'd be like, actually no. I was on and off. I'd been to see my GP about this, and I was on and off disulfiram, which is like a, it's a tablet that you take that basically if you ingest alcohol, it'll make you physically sick.
Okay.
So I kind of was on that and I was off it. And then at the end of 2022, I had a particularly bad night of drinking where I ended up self-harming. And then it all just became really, really obvious to me, like, that I was out of control. Like,
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Yeah, like, at the time, it was so traumatic. And I couldn't really, like, it was so hard to realise that I'd brought myself to that point. But it was probably the best thing that could have happened. And I'm so grateful that, like, it happened to me so young, even though at the time it felt like, my world was ending. Mm. Like, I was like, as a young person, I didn't know how I was going to live in the world without drinking. So then I suppose I called the rehab center. It was in November and they
what
said,
what age were you then?
22.
Okay. Yeah. So young.
Yeah. So they said they had space that December, and I spent Christmas of 22 in rehab.
That's incredibly hard.
Yeah.
It's incredibly hard to be away from your family, but also I would imagine, you know, Christmas again is a big party season, big drinking
for
season.
Sure.
It was probably maybe a little bit easier for you to just be away from it.
Oh, honestly, it was such a relief. Like, I remember the first few days in there, and it was just like, for some people, they're able to kind of, maybe they might just go to AA and they'll get sober that way. But for me, like, I had to be physically removed from yeah. alcohol. I needed to be safe. And I'm sure it was such a relief for my family as well to have me safe and away for those 5 weeks. And it was actually like, it was probably one of the best experiences of my life. Like, I look back on it really fondly because for the first time ever, I was kind of surrounded by people who knew exactly what was going on in my brain.
Who I suppose didn't dismiss it either.
Exactly.
Amongst
yeah.
like, I thought you'd be grand. It's only a couple of drinks.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So it was very much like I was actually kind of immersed in the reality of my situation. And like, it's quite a positive environment as well because everyone's there kind of to get well. And yeah, like, I think before I went to rehab, like, this rehab seemed like a big, bad, scary word. And after I came out, I was like, the attitude that we have towards addiction is just so backwards because, like, it's the same as if you broke your leg and, you know, you had to go to hospital for six weeks. Like, you're going to get better and you're going to try and fix yourself as a person. So yeah, I
we're a bit blasé and like back against the wall about it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And I think that's why, particularly in Ireland, like, we have such a bizarre attitude towards what is healthy drinking and what is unhealthy drinking.
Yeah.
And yeah, for a long time, I kind of would have assumed that 7 pints after work was fine.
Yeah. Yeah. You were, speaking of work, you were still working at the time in a restaurant. Like, how did you have that conversation with your employer and how did that go?
Yeah, so I had just thrown my hands up in the air and I knew that I needed to tell her. And I suppose I sent her a text first and then I went and I had a chat with her. And like, at that point I'd gotten pretty good at hiding it from a work. So like, in the midst of my drinking, I would do all this bargaining with myself, you know, and I'd be like, okay, well, I'm not going to drink after work. And then I would binge drink on the weekends, or I'd be like, I'm not going to drink X day. And then the rest of the week I would be a mess. So they
but you would compartmentalize it with yourself.
Yeah,
so you were like, well, this is the reward.
Everything. Yeah. So they hadn't really seen it in work. So it kind of took them very much by surprise. But it was an amazingly supportive conversation. Like, I was so, so lucky in that my employer straight away was like, absolutely, you do what you need to do for you. And
I suppose as well, it is important to stress that most of the restaurants you did work in had a good, healthy work-life
balance. For sure.
But, you know, still you have to realise that it is a high-pressure environment and this was the reality of it. And this is what, you know, led you to drinking in excess.
Yeah.
So, like, how did you feel then coming out of rehab and going back into kitchens?
I kind of, for a time, I kind of accepted that I wouldn't be able to go back into restaurants. I just didn't think that sobriety was compatible with the hospitality industry. Certainly, I had never, in the course of my work, I might have met one sober person. I had never met a sober chef. So that idea didn't exist in my head. So I kind of, like, it was scary coming out because I didn't know what I was going to do after that. You know, I'd kind of given 5 years of my life to working in kitchens and I just had no idea what I was going to do. I was fresh out of rehab. I was like, yeah.
Well, it's insane because at that time as well, you think like you're 22 going on 23 and yeah. like you're like, it's the last 5 years I've done this, and in the grand scheme of things, it's you're still so young. You know, yeah. you could restart an entire new career.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So I did take a break for a while, and then I suppose I missed it. And I missed working with food. And I decided that I would kind of start slow. So I kind of went back to work somewhere a bit casual, yeah. Kind of friendlier hours. And then I just was like, okay, after about a year, I was like, I think I'm comfortable enough in my sobriety. I want to give this a go.
Yeah.
Which arguably, like, it's a pretty risky decision, you know, and I did spend a lot of time thinking about that. Mm-hmm. So I went back into fine dining, which was an experience sober. Like, the second that I'd done my first week, I was like, oh my God, I can see now why everyone drinks so much. Because yeah. it's exhausting, and you just kind of, it's so hard to come down off of the adrenaline. So I would find a lot of the time after service, I'd just be like a mad thing. Like I would be like scrubbing and cleaning, trying to kind of channel all of this energy into something. And I did find it hard. Like, people would kind of have a drink after service, and I would just sort of have to remove myself from that yeah. situation, which was so weird for me to leave work. Like, I would be the first out the door when we were ready to go, you know?
Well, as well, though, I think, like, because you've got such a good relationship with everybody else, and they don't seem to have the same issues either, you know?
Exactly.
Of drinking.
Yeah.
They can have one or yeah. two drinks, yeah. I assume. I'm not making any assumptions here.
No, for sure.
But it's the connection, the social connection of being able to sit down yeah. and actually talk about everything and being like, oh my God, your mom was a wagon, you know?
Yeah,
like, all
yeah,
these
yeah.
little, like, bits
for
and bobs
sure,
of doing that.
And, like, slowly but surely, I was kind of able to, like, stick around. And I found, like, my relationship with alcohol has kind of constantly evolved since I've come out. You know, I don't miss it as much as I used to. I can't say that I don't miss it entirely, because yeah. there are days where I do. But yeah, I just found that when I started back in fine dining, I went into the restaurant and I'd say they thought I was loopy, because I just, I suppose, like, building yourself back up in rehab, it kind of gives you stronger boundaries. Mm-hmm. So I went in there all guns blazing. I was like, I'm an alcoholic. I'm not working Tuesdays because I'm going to therapy, you
yeah.
know, like X, Y, and Z. So I was very public about it from the start, which I appreciate not everyone is able to do. But I just felt like for myself, it was almost a defense mechanism
yeah.
because I was 10 times less likely to pick up a drink in front of someone who knew I was an alcoholic.
Yeah.
And also, I just really wanted to challenge this industry norm of, you know, like, everyone's going to go out and get locked after service and roll in the next day in bits, you know.
Yeah. You are a huge advocate for mental health awareness in the hospitality industry. Like, have things improved when it comes to tackling this culture or recognizing the need for, like, a healthy work-life culture, I suppose?
I think over the last few years, things have been evolving. Like, there are people starting conversations around staff welfare, mm-hmm. Because restaurants function like machines, and a lot of the time it's the staff that kind of get forgotten about. And yeah, certainly there's a lot more talk about having a work-life balance. I don't necessarily think that it's changing at a rate that's fast enough. And I think if it was, I wouldn't be sitting here talking about
yeah.
this, because it's so recent that I went through all of this. And I think people have this idea that the industry has come on in leaps and bounds, but I would argue that there's still a lot more work to be done. And I think it's only by people coming out and talking about it. Like, we have to meet the industry where it's at. It's great that things are slowly changing.
Yeah.
But if we don't start addressing people's realities, well, then we're never going to be able to make a positive change.
Do you think addiction is common in the hospitality industry?
I think so, yeah. Maybe not so much, like, addiction can happen to anyone, mm-hmm. but, like, I think it's more so the relationship with substances. Like, that is what I would be more kind of trying to tackle, because addiction might not happen to everyone, but everyone can abuse substances at some point or another in their lives. And this idea of using substances as a coping mechanism has such a negative impact on your mental health and your self-image. And yeah, I just think we need to completely rethink our attitude to alcohol and substances within the hospitality industry.
How long have you been sober now?
2 years and 2 months.
Amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
You must be so proud of yourself.
Yeah, I am. Well, I'm working on being proud of myself.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, you should be. You've put the work in, and like, not many people are actually able to admit that they have a problem, and it's very incredibly hard. But you saying that you're going to the GP and you're on medication, and even on that medication, you were still willing to take a drink on top of it. That you went, okay, no, here I am. This is where I'm going. Well done.
Yeah, thank
like,
you so
much. It's really is amazing. Chef Anya Buds, thank you so much for coming in and telling us your story today. You're truly remarkable. You really and truly are. And you're 25.
You. Yeah, 25.
So much left to do. You're only at the very beginning of it all. Now, if you are affected by any of these issues discussed with my chat with Anya, you can find information on the rte.ie/helplines. Thanks a million.
Thank you so much.
2FM Mornings
with Laura Fox.